Rob is a podcast is sponsored in part by our listeners who've become patrons, who I love more than Abby Maria loves her gold bracelet. To find out more about the benefits of becoming a Rob Has a Podcast patron, visit us at robhasawebsite.com/patron.
Though Steven is not around, you still have to break it down like they've won the game a million times.
Well, actually, they didn't really win the game at all.
Survivor know-it-alls.
I can't feel my face right now because I'm so excited to talk about this with you guys. I've been bursting all day long to talk about it, and here we are, Survivor Know-It-Alls. And let me introduce to you for the first time this season, and perhaps maybe on an ongoing basis if this trend continues. We might have to fire Stephen Fishback for cause if this keeps up from the, really hurting the Know-It-Alls brand out there. I'm Rob Sister. Here is our co-host for Survivor Know-It-Alls this season, Josh Wigler. Josh, how are you?
Oh, my God. You've been bursting all day. I've been bursting for months waiting to talk about this. Oh, my God. I'm so excited to be here. Poor Stephen Fishback. That was rough.
It was a rough night for Stephen Fishback. We will talk about all that here as we are about 15 minutes after the end of the Survivor Cambodia premiere. And boy, it was great. It was great. It was worth the wait, I might even say.
One of the great premieres in Survivor history. You know, this is one of the most hyped seasons that we've ever come across. I can't think of a season more hyped than this than maybe Heroes Villains. That delivered. It delivered in every single way. It was hilarious. It was strategic. It was shocking. It was fantastic. And never forget the branch. The branch in our history, in our hearts forever.
Yes. We'll talk about it. All right. So much to do here tonight and so much to set up. So we are talking about, I can't believe it, Vetus, the first boot from Survivor Cambodia. I would not have guessed that. I really felt like Vetus was set up well here. I really thought up until, you know, the actual immunity challenge, I didn't think that Vetus was going home. And
you didn't think that Vetus was getting the dodo edit?
No,
you didn't sense that at all?
I really didn't. The only thing I saw on Twitter, somebody said that Vetus said, well, unless somebody does something stupid. And I didn't even think that he did something stupid. So we'll talk about all that. But boy, so much to break down here on our Survivor Cambodia premiere night. So for those of you guys who are here with us live, we are going to then be later on, at least I am, and along with Scott St. Pierre, I'm going to be following the Big Brother 17 finale later on tonight. We will have that coming for you at 12:30 a.m. Eastern time. So that's coming up here on a long night for us here as reality TV fans. And then, of course, we'll get into all of it tomorrow. I will speak with Vetus Biskauskas. And Josh, you will also speak with Vetus.
Yeah, I will. I'll be doing exit interviews at parade.com. You can get that stuff, robhaswebsite.com/parade. I'm very excited to talk to Vetus. I feel bad. I feel like I played a role in this. People who don't know me, I do Survivor Press. I was out there for Cambodia. It was my first time on location. I've been writing some articles from the experience. And one of the things that I published today was I did this fantasy draft with Jeff Probst where we picked our winners. And I picked Vetus. And I got it really wrong. I screwed up bad. So this is a bad start for me as the substitute know-it-all.
Okay. I don't think it was your fault. And we'll talk about Vetus, Survivor Blood vs. Water, very fresh in the minds of both Josh and myself. We watched it last month as part of the Evolution Strategy. We rewatched all 30 seasons of Survivor in the last 14 months. So we're ready to talk about all of that. So on Thursday, in addition to speaking with Vetus, I'll also speak with the Big Brother Final 3 before I am joined by another Survivor Borneo contestant. Jenna Lewis will be here with me in the studio tomorrow to talk about all of this.
There is no better time for a fishbowl reunion than this.
There you go. Very good. Well done.
Very good.
And so I'm going to talk with Jenna about all of this and what she thought about Kelly's return to Survivor. And I think that Jenna is also an interesting person to talk to because she was somebody who had her own second chance with me on Survivor All-Stars. And I think that she has a little bit of a unique insight into coming back and playing with people that you know before. So we'll talk about all that and more. Plus, voicemails with Jessica Lee. So get those into the show. robiswebsite.com/voicemail 323-282-RHAP. And so let's get into this. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast if you want all that. robiswebsite.com/iTunes. Let's talk about Vetus. Let's talk about this first boot here in
Namaste.
Survivor. Yeah, the Vetus.
Just totally went to yoga. Should have gone to yoga.
And so Vetus is the first one out. And Josh, let me ask you, for the people that are watching this at home, it's as somebody who went through this in Survivor All-Stars, who has been on the receiving end of one of these early boots in an All-Star season, what's the narrative here from the show? Is it Vetus is somebody who sort of played his way out of the game with the stuff with the yoga, with touching people,
right,
and making people uncomfortable? Shireen
downward
called him smarmy.
That's no good.
Or is it Vetus is such a threat, we have to get him out now?
Yeah, I feel like the show's narrative is the first thing. I think that the show painted Vetus in a light. And I mean, it was Vetus's actions. You can't deny that Vetus was being really touchy-feely with a lot of people. He has that great quote, "Abby, how's your body? You want to do some yoga?" So there's a lot of that. There was a lot of the Vetus yoga thing. But I feel like, listen, Shireen, Spencer, Wentworth, those people, they were staffing up. They were arming up, and they are looking across the aisle at who we're going up against. There was a very quick division between what Varner describes as the beach people versus the shelter people. And if you look at the shelter people, if those are the people that you're targeting as the beach people, who are you going to target out of those guys? And in a season like this, where things are going to get switched up, where everybody's so dangerous, what's Terry going to do? What's Wigglesworth going to do? What's Wu going to do? Vetus is a guy who's been shown to be very manipulative in the past. If you've got a chance to shoot him out early, I think you got to take it. My feeling is that this was a preemptive strike on Vetus before you let him go any further. I think that the show painted it more as the Dodo exit for Vetus, but my hunch is let's get rid of this guy who we just do not trust as far as we can throw him right now while we can.
I think that's a shame. I think it's a bit of an oversimplification also, because I think that if you go back and read some of the pregame articles that you wrote, and that between Dalton Ross and Gordon Holmes and any sort of pregame press, I think that Vetus was a name that you heard a lot from Shireen. I'm pretty sure Kelly Wentworth mentioned him. I think that Spencer might have mentioned him as a potential target. And I think that Vetus ended up getting a particularly bad draw with a couple of people from the new school seasons that sort of targeted him, and rightfully so. And his Vetus was somebody that I talked about. I was surprised more people weren't talking about Vetus, because having watched him in Survivor Blood versus Water, I really came away from that rewatch like, Vetus is so dangerous.
You were freaked out.
I would be very intimidated to play with Vetus, and I think that I would be one of those people also there. If I didn't feel like he was totally with me, and he was totally coming to Robga, I don't think that's
Robga. That's just sitting in your chair all day, right?
I would be very intimidated, because I mean, Vetus can charm people like that, and that he got with a group of people that were sort of immune to his charms, but he is a very dangerous player.
Yeah, he is a dangerous player. And I, you know, Shireen was talking about, let's get rid of Vetus. Wentworth was saying the same thing. She said to me something to the effect of, Vetus, I like Vetus. I would go to yoga with Vetus, but he's the kind of guy that if you get him close to the end, he could win this thing. So it was a respect analysis from Wentworth. Spencer was a little lukewarm, I felt, in terms of his feeling towards Vetus. But when it came to someone like Abby or PG, I feel like there were opportunities there for Vetus to work those people over, especially PG, who's somebody who's right on that line between old school and new school. She's literally right in the middle. She's 15 out of 30. I feel like there were opportunities there. So whatever Vetus's, you know, snake oil that he likes to sell, they were not buying it. And, you know, I think you can say that that's a credit to someone like Shireen and Spencer doing a better job at wooing over Abby and PG and Varner. But maybe you know, there's some points you got to dock on Vitas too, who just obviously was rubbing these two people the wrong way, and those are pivotal votes.
Yeah, I just don't think he saw it coming. Do you think that Vitas was not served by the no huddle before tribal council?
Yeah, I don't think that was good. I don't think that was great. I feel like Vitas is the kind of guy that when you know that he's in a situation where he's got to scramble, he's pretty good at scrambling, as we've seen in the past. The cat vote in Blood versus Water, the Laura B vote. He was really good at getting himself out of those jams. I know that there are a lot of people who thought that he had sort of this predestined path based on whatever's set up with Aris and Tina. I feel like he just, you know, the odds are against him in that moment. That's my read on the situation. He's very good at that. He's really intense in those tribal councils. He gets himself out of some serious jams there. And I think if he's given enough time to unscramble this mess, I think that maybe something could have happened. I definitely think that going straight to tribal was very bad for this guy.
Let's just set up the tribe breakdown in terms of how the vote went. We heard it described a couple different ways. We heard it described as old school versus new school, but that wasn't necessarily, and it was more in sort of mindset. It was sort of like the way the no collar, blue collar, like, yeah, this person's, you know, in law school, but they have a no collar attitude.
Right.
So it was an old school mentality versus the new school mentality. We also heard this described as beach people versus shelter people. And
yeah,
it turned out to be shelter people were Vitas, Kelly, Wu, and Terry, seemingly also Jeff Varner, maybe?
Yeah no, Varner was number five in that roster.
And so, Josh, for all the talk that we had did about Jeff Varner and his pregame alliances, did Jeff Varner flip on his pregame alliance at the first vote?
Yeah, it looks like it. It sure does. It sure does. But I mean, what are you going to do? It's going to be a 5-5 split if he doesn't do it. And he's the kind of guy who said directly to me, I will not draw rocks. I'm not going to a tie. This is a guy who got blasted out of Survivor on a tie. He is not going to a tie on that first tribal council. Not no way, not no how. So it's not a shock at all that Varner flipped.
That's so interesting.
You know, this is a guy who apparently, if you watched that video, if you watched that video from the rap, of Varner's different pregame alliances, he's on Takeo with every single person there has interest in working with him. So it was really, he was in this position where he had to choose one side over the other. I think given the way the odds were shaken out, given the way the numbers were shaken out, I don't think that Varner had a choice. I think Varner absolutely had to do what he had to do here.
Yeah, and it's funny, in our pregame assessment, I think I really saw where this divide was of the old school versus new school. But in my analysis, I thought that old school was going to win out. And I thought that it was going to be, okay, well, these guys, Terry and Jeff and Kelly, they're going to target the new school people. And I sort of had them all going out early. So that's interesting that on this first vote, it's Varner and PG who end up shifting to the beach people, to the new school people. And they ultimately get this to happen. And that's so fascinating what you touched on about how Jeff Varner went out of the game in Survivor Australia due to a 5-5 tie. And here he is back 14 years later in this same exact situation, headed
staring
into potentially
down the barrel of a gun of a tie.
Another 5-5 identical tie in situation. And you saw him at the end of the vote. And I said that I felt like Jeff Varner was being very aggressive towards the end of that. He was basically the, hey, I'm ready to vote now, Jeff. Let's vote.
Yeah.
Let's do this. I'm not sitting around here. I'm ready to do it. And he's ready to flip on those people that he's on these conference calls with and these pregame alliances with. And now you know why he's so eager just to get it over with. He wants to rip the Band-Aid off.
Well, how about a story, Rob? How about the fact that that was much more intense?
Story.
Much more intense in person. There was more to it that wasn't shown on the show. I got to watch the tribal council. They have like a monitor that's set up a little while away from it. And right before the vote, Varner raises his hand. He says, I'd like to ask a question. And he asks a question of PG and Wentworth and asks them if the conversation we had down by the water the other day, is that who you are still voting for? They both said yes. And he said, all right. And Terry Dietz was shaking in his boots and said, what was that? What was that all about, Varner? And that's where you get this line from Varner where he's saying, tonight's a very important night. It's my second chance. I'm not wasting it. So he dropped what Terry deemed a Varner bomb in that moment. I was really surprised that that didn't make the air. It was intense. It was a really intense moment. And Varner blew it up. He blew up that tribal council. And the confidence that you're seeing from him on the show, when he gets up to that voting booth, which wasn't shown either, the dude was shaking. He was quaking. He took a long time before he wrote Vitas's name down. So this was a guy who was very visibly torn between alliances right down to the point when he put the pen on the paper.
How shocked was Vitas?
Vetus, I think he looked a little more shocked on the show than he looked in person. He had a smile on his face. He was nodding along the whole time as he was seeing it. He did have that moment at the end where he turns to everybody and he says, you know, I get it. Great game. You guys have so much fun. See you later. I thought he took it really well. I thought he was a really good sportsmanship about it.
Okay. How about the target of the old school group where you have Vetus, Terry, Kelly, and Wu? Do you agree Vetus is the correct target there? Again, you need to win challenges. Yeah. And this group, this Bion tribe, I believe that they are a little outgunned when it comes down to now they
Bion or Takeo is outgunned.
I'm sorry, Takeo. I believe even though they got through the first part of that challenge first, because Keith Nail had some difficulty with keeping those torches lit.
Now there's a problem there. He's got a problem with fire in these premiere episodes.
To get rid of Vetus, then don't you feel like that is a curious first vote?
No, I don't. I think it's the right vote. I don't know who of that crew you would target instead. I don't know that there's one that makes sense. I think you could say all of the same things that you just said about Terry is strong, Kelly Wigglesworth is strong, Wu is strong, Vetus is strong. The one thing that Vetus has that those three have not proven is a real ability to manipulate people to think really, really hard about the strategic side of the game. If you're gunning after one of those four, I think you got to get rid of Vetus here. I also think in a season like this where there are pre-existing relationships across the tribes, you know, there's people from the Cagayan Four that have been split up evenly across these two tribes. There's two San Juan del Surs over on Bayon and one on Takeo, people who know each other from outside of their seasons. There's potential to mix and mingle further down the line, where I think that in a traditional season where you're trying to keep your numbers strong, trying to keep your strength up, you're trying to keep your guys intact, I don't think that that has to be the principal concern here. I think if you're Shireen's people, if you're Spencer's people, and you've got five and you're looking at knocking out one of the people on the other side, I think Vetus has to go every single day of the week.
The alternative was to vote out Abby Maria. Is there any wisdom in voting out Abby potentially? Because if you have a six, do you have to get rid of Vetus there? Is it better off to take out Abby Maria, who is somewhat of a divisive force in the camp?
It's like the sugar thing?
Yes.
It just like quit the person who, you know, isn't really doing too much.
The person who is creating at least the most discourse in the tribe.
Yeah, I feel like Abby seems like she's probably pretty loyal to this group, though. I know that Shireen really wants to be working with Abby. I got to imagine that Abby says the same thing about Shireen. Abby and Shireen wanted to work together. These are two people who feel really good about each other. I think for all those reasons, the fact that strength is not the principal concern on a season like this, from Shireen's perspective, from Spencer's perspective, from Wentworth's, I don't think that there's anyone in that group that makes any sense to go after immediately other than Vetus. I don't think that they should turn on Abby. I don't see the sense in it. I get why the other people voted for Abby. She is causing problems. And maybe if you're PG, maybe you want to start looking about voting out Abby after the whole bracelet scandal.
Yeah, let's talk about Braceletgate.
Yeah.
First off, do you suspect any foul play in Braceletgate?
Right. Is this like someone snuck a granola bar in somebody's bag?
Because there is this parallel between where in Survivor Philippines, when Pete Yurkowski, he ends up framing RC by putting the clue to the hidden immunity idol in her bag, and then falls out. And then Admiral's like, what is this? Well, you had the clue in your bag?
Right. Well, I mean, I think from like a PTSD level, I see it. Like, she's just having flashbacks as soon as something's gone missing. She's like, someone did this! Foul play! But in terms of it being like one of the players, we would have seen something. So unless you're saying like someone's just screwing with Abby.
Right. Did somebody... I mean, it would make no sense for PG to be like... I mean, and PG, I believe, works in jewelry to say like, oh, that's a nice bracelet. I could never have another one like that. Let me steal it from Abby Maria and put it in my own bag. It would make sense in like the Russell Hance... or the Pete Yurkowski sort of world where, say, hey, Jeff Varner wants to stir up trouble. Let me take Abby Maria's bracelet. She'd be the perfect person to take something from, put it in PG's bag, and then watch the fireworks go off.
Right.
Nobody copped to it.
No one cops to it. We don't see it happen unless there's some like the genius level editing that's going to happen in episode two, flashing back to this moment that reveals something like that. I don't think it happened. But it's amazing that it stirs up that paranoia in Abby Maria immediately. Abby Maria coming back after Philippines wanting to do everything in her power not to be that person not to throw the coconut at Scoopin's head again. And she's immediately just throwing coconuts again. It's fantastic.
No, well, let me say that in fairness to Abby Maria and in defense of Abby Maria, I thought I said, all right, here we go. Watch Abby Maria blow up. And I feel like at least through one episode, I felt like Abby Maria did a really good job of not losing her mind.
Holding it together. But it looked really hard.
It looked really hard.
It looked really tough.
And that's why I'm giving her credit. Because it seemed like she wanted to explode. She wanted to go off. And Philippines Abby Maria would have gone off. That top would have blown. But she kept it. She stayed cool, calm, and collective enough to be able to at least talk to PG. PG did not become the new RC through one episode, at least. So I have to give her credit for where credit is due. Because if Abby Maria blows up in that spot, I think we're definitely talking about Abby Maria being the first person voted out of the tribe.
Yeah, but you got to imagine Abby Maria being that sensitive and that even if it was minorly volatile compared to the volatility we've seen in Abby in the past, for that to happen day one, day two, day three, that's a long road ahead. It's a bad. I hear what you're saying.
I'm giving credit where it's due, Josh.
I know, and I appreciate that, and I hear what you're saying. But I feel like it's an interesting start. It feels like the old Abby is not too far behind.
Okay, let's switch over and talk about what's going on the Bayan tribe. And basically, the story, which I was not prepared for coming into this, is a bit of the Dodo edit for Stephen Fishback on night one. I think we will not be hearing too much of
Stephen's the best.
Know it all.
Nope, not tonight. Not tonight.
Oh, it was tough. It was tough. It was funny as hell. It was great.
You know, it's funny, Josh, in your pregame press that you wrote for Parade.com, you talked about that when you visited the Bayan camp, Stephen Fishback was nowhere to be found. Was he looking for the idol when you were there?
He was really privately trying to break that branch. He just didn't want anybody to see what he was up to. No, he was...
Who had more luck with the stick, Stephen Fishback or Jason Siska and Eliza?
I think that it's not quite as mortifying as Prince Siska. I think that Jason Siska's was a little bit more embarrassing. But I think that this was beautiful. I thought it was kind of endearing. I liked this. I thought this was great Stephen Fishback stuff.
It is a little upsetting because it makes me feel like, but were we paying attention during all this time? I'm very surprised to see him go out there and go so hard after the idol. And looking for the idol on day one. Because again, you guys have all the footage. But I have to feel like that has come up certainly before in these last couple seasons. And you think about the people that have gone out and done that. I'm going to go crazy and go look for the idol in the first couple days. There's not a great track record for people that find the idol first one or two, 3 days in the game. And really at the expense of making relationships, that's not a great history. You have people like the Christina Kells,
right,
and people like Christina Markowski.
Right.
It's not a great look to go out there and start being seen as somebody who is looking for the idol. And now, I guess, unless he's saying that I am 100% the first person kicked off, I need to find the idol.
Well, I think that maybe there's a little bit of that going on. And in Fishback's defense, I don't think that that's far off. You know, I think that he's looking at the types of people that he's surrounded by on this tribe. Everybody that he wanted to work with in this game is on Takeo. All the people he did not want to work with are on his tribe. He's in trouble.
You know, he got a terrible draw in terms
really of... Really bad draw for Stephen Fishback. And I think that he feels it immediately. Mm-hmm. I don't think that it takes doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that he's around people who want him dead. Or at least people who aren't going to be as amenable to working with him as the people like Spencer or Shireen or even Kelly Wentworth, people he's tight or tight-ish with.
Yeah,
and he says it on the show. He says, either I got to make a connection or I got to find an idol fast. So I think that going and looking as aggressively as it seems that he went looking for it, probably not great. You've got Kimmy Kappenberg, of all people, the most astute person in the bunch, is saying, I think he's looking for the idol. It's not a great look. It's, you know, it's just another bad draw for Steven.
Yeah, and again, in fairness to Steven, just like I said with Vetus, I think it's easy to say, oh, well, they're going to vote Steven off because he couldn't even break a stick. And, right. and he couldn't even weave palm fronds. And nobody's going to go after Steven because of that. They're going to go after that because they feel like he's a threat. And he sort of played into that hand, sort of like where back in Survivor Worlds Apart, we talked about that, where Mike was making it easy for Rodney to sort of say, oh, crazy Mike. And the, right. and the more he and he just played into that hand. And for the people that are saying Steven's the biggest threat out here, by going out there and searching for that idol and not trying to change that perception. Like, I felt like that was a big moment that he missed out on when they got the fire started, when everybody was dancing and celebrating. Who knows?
Everybody's there. Yeah.
Everybody was there. It was like a moment for the camp, and he was the one person that seemed like they weren't there. And again, who knows? Maybe like Monica wasn't there and we didn't notice. But it just seemed like I would be trying to, if I was him, be doing everything I could to put people at ease rather than. Because I feel like looking at myself, and again, Steven and I are not the same person. Make no mistake about that. No.
Yeah.
But we're not. But I feel like that we would be judged similarly. I would be trying to make everybody feel comfortable with me and not be doing anything to arouse their suspicion. And I feel like I'm never going to be the person who's going to be finding the idol in the woods.
Well,
like,
you just spent the past 14 months watching every season of Survivor. Steven prepared for this by watching Survivor Africa. Mm-hmm. So his preparation level, his homework was lacking.
Yeah. So I just feel like that was a misstep. And again, luckily, he's on a tribe that appears to be physically have an advantage over the other tribe. And that other tribe also voted off one of their strongest males at this first tribal council. So Steven, yeah. potentially, while all signs point to him being the first person voted out of the Bayan tribe, things can still happen. There's still time. And hopefully, for his sake, that his tribe can go on a bit of an immunity run here.
Well, don't you think that this is, I mean, just to go back to Vetus and connect it to Steven here, that's a real tone setter. To get rid of Vetus first, for him to be the first person kicked out of the season, I feel it's like anybody's fair game. Anybody goes. People who you really expect to do well in this game, to go far in this game, we're coming after everybody. I can see your point where for Steven, it might be, oh my God, they got rid of a stronger athletic type. That might be really good news for me because I'm not that guy. I've been doing CrossFit, but not enough. But at the same point, Steven is, you know, considered, he's perceived as this big strategic threat out there. It's almost like it gives a guy like Savage or Jeremy the green light to go like, well, let's get rid of Steven. They're getting rid of threats already. Let's knock out Fishback while we can, as opposed to someone like maybe Cass, who was thought of as kind of this consensus first boot coming into this thing because of her chaotic history. This might actually be, I think that the tone could be broken in two different directions for Steven. Either this could be good for him or it could be really bad for him. I feel like seeing Vetus go first, if I'm Fishback, I'm nervous. That makes me nervous. I don't like to see Vetus being gone.
If I'm Steven, I'm thrilled to see Vetus go out because I'm feeling, and again, I have not spoken with these people about this stuff, but I just from going through the mindset.
Well, you did, but they all lied to you.
What else is new? Right. But that being said, I feel like if I'm Steven and I come on to the next challenge and it's like, all right, get your first look at Takeo, Vetus voted out. I'm like, okay, this is good for me because I think that Steven is somebody who is probably had these conversations with the Spencers of the world, with the Shireens of the world. Who knows, maybe the Kelly Wentworth. So that new school group that won the night is that group that is going to work with Steven.
Like, and you think he sees a home over there?
Yes. So yeah. If Steven is going to make noise in this game, he needs to reconnect with that group. He needs to survive this first part of the game and get to those players that are over there. So I think that Vetus, while he played in Blood versus Water, is part of that old school group that lost the night on that first vote. Now, it doesn't really change anything in his own tribe, but in terms of the long-term prospects for him in the game, I think that this was a win for Steven tonight.
Yeah, the thing is, what's really interesting about Steven being on Bayan and everybody else, you know, the whole Takeo tribe, I feel like if the old schoolers had won the night, there's a home there for Steven, too. I feel like he can connect with Terry Dietz. I think Terry Dietz likes Steven. I know that Vetus would have been open to working with him. I feel like that there are people over there, Wigglesworth, he can connect with. Wu he can connect with. They've got that runner-up thing. I think in either direction, no matter what had happened over there, I feel like he's got a potential home in Takeo if he can survive long enough to get to those types of people. And I feel like if Abby Maria is gone, as opposed to someone like Vetus, I feel like the tone isn't so sharp in the direction of let's get rid of big game targets right away. I think that that is bad for Fishback. And I think that he had options no matter how it broke. But instead of it being Abby, where I feel like the heat wouldn't be so firmly on everybody now that a guy like Vetus is gone. I feel like there's some drawback there.
I definitely see what you're saying in terms of let's get rid of the people that are upsetting the apple cart in terms of an Abby Maria. But I feel like if the Terry side of things wins out, I feel like that Steven is just going, you know, it's four quarters for a dollar over there of yeah. people like the Andrews and the alpha males who are going to be trying to band together. I think that Terry is just still part of that same thing. So I don't think that that's necessarily a great fit for him either.
So we know that immunity idols are going to look different this season. Do you think that Steven is going to try and play the branch like an idol at some point?
just drag it in like, yeah. Hey, what's this?
what if the branch is an idol? We don't know.
Yeah. Can somebody give me a hand with this?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
I'm glad you brought up the immunity idols because I thought that this worked spectacularly. I was sort of on the fence.
The challenge thing?
Yes. I felt like the whole sequence played out. A great night for Kelly Wentworth. I thought she did fantastic. I really enjoyed her in terms of like her confessions and everything. It was really a great moment.
How mad do you think people are who are Kelly Wentworth haters? How angry are they about her getting the idol, or do you think that they're turned around?
I don't think that if you hated Kelly Wentworth coming into tonight, I think you're probably just annoyed that she has the idol. I don't think that she turned people around, but I think that if you were on the fence about Kelly Wentworth, I think that this is a night where she easily could convert you into a fan.
Showing some game.
She had a better night tonight than she did in any single episode
of
San Juan del Sur. Combine those five. She had more highlights tonight than she did through five episodes of San Juan del Sur.
So yeah, we combed those episodes over. We were looking for anything. There's nothing. Nothing in the four or five Kelly Wentworth episodes in San Juan del Sur. So much more in one episode here of Cambodia than in that entire season.
There's not a lot there, but she has a great night tonight. She finds the clue, and then I have to say that was captivating television where at the same time you have what's going on with the with trying to open the lock, with trying to get the key, the jailbreak. And at the same time, there's a second jailbreak happening where everybody's paying attention and she's trying to sneak back and grab the thing from under the table. And she knows exactly where it is. And she's like, it was gripping television.
Yeah, it was good. I mean, kudos to Dalton Ross. This is a Dalton Ross idea that he's been throwing at Probst for years. Survivor finally bit. I think that it paid off enormously. It was incredibly intense to witness in person. I was there. It really looked for a long time like she wasn't going to do it. She ran past it. She had her chance. She was about to grab it. I think it was Shireen that was like, Wentworth, get to the mat. We have to all be on the mat. And so she shooed her away and brought her to the mat. And it looked like she'd lost her opportunity to grab it. And she kept looking back. She keeps looking back. She doesn't know if she's going to do it. I have all these producers standing behind me being, gosh, she blew it. She effing blew it. She's not going to go do it. And I'm standing next to Parvati Shallow, and Kelly Wentworth finally just looks back at that thing, cheeses it, grabs it, comes back, and it was everything that I had to do just not to like yelp on the spot and be like, ah, she got it! Oh my God!
She really made
this unforgettable face I'll never forget where she was just like, like that was just the most intense thing that's ever happened. So I feel like it worked spectacularly. I think that this idea was a cool idea from the onset. And I think in practice, it's already proven that it bears fruit. This was really awesome. It was great TV. You know, a lot of people who are into Survivor for the strategic stuff kind of yada yada through the challenges a little bit. But this adds a lot of strategic drama to the challenges now. Getting an idol in the mix. And is somebody courageous enough to get it? Kelly Wentworth was courageous enough. She did it.
Yeah, she really did a great job there. And it was fascinating also because it was like, okay, well, is she going to blow it? It's because I'm saying she could get voted out here because if the right person turns around at the right time, like, what is she doing? She's looking for an idol right now. We're trying to win immunity. and she's off looking for the immunity idol. I mean, you could have seen her, and Vetus had that line, unless somebody does something stupid, right. I'm like, okay, well, who's the person that's going to do something stupid? I'm like, maybe it's Kelly. Maybe Kelly is going to get busted doing this, and she's going to end up getting voted out looking for this idol. So that was really, really cool the way that it happened. And the other thing about that, Josh, it's like there's so much invested in that challenge because you find the clue, you're lucky enough to find the clue to the hidden immunity idol. Like, that clue is not an iPad where it changes to the clue for the next challenge. You have one shot to find the idol now that you found that clue.
Yeah, that's the deal. You know, if you find the clue, it's for the next challenge. If you did not get it, you're SOL. You got to find another clue. That's the way that it's going to work. And I believe also, if no one finds a clue to begin with ahead of a challenge, the idol is not there for the other tribe. So it didn't look like anyone on Bayon found one. Didn't look like Fishback found the clue. Didn't look like anyone found the clue. So there was no idol there to grab. So it was really only the Takeo idol was in play. So unless somebody at Bayon gets a clue, there's not going to be a Bayon idol in play for a little while. And I wonder, what do you think? Do you think that there's going to be another Takeo clue? Or are they going to keep re-upping these idols? Or do you think that's it? The Takeo one's off the market.
I think that we have one idol in play. I think that's it in the pre-merge game.
Yeah, and Kelly Wentworth got it on episode one. So you just talked about how it's usually bad, or the track record for people who find idols this early is not fantastic. Christina Kell, Christine Markowski, who's looking for an idol that early. Is this bad news for Wentworth, or is this...
No.
Can the streak be broken?
I think that this is a... I'm glad you brought this up, because I think a lot of people probably had the same question, that it seemed like Kelly was a little bit smarter about how she went about her idol hunt, because she was like, she said, oh, I'm going to go out and look for things, because there is gathering that has to go on where it's like, okay, I'm going to go out and get coconuts. I'm going to go out and
like one palm frond on the trail.
Right. Where I'm going out and getting firewood. I'm going to go out and she's like leaving things for her to keep going back and stuff like that. And again, she's somebody that if Kelly Wentworth is gone for 20 minutes, nobody's like, oh my God, where's Kelly? What is she doing? Where is Kelly? And so she's able to maneuver around in the game in a way that Stephen Fishback is unable to do it. And also, it doesn't seem like Stephen was out there with the intention of doing productive work.
Right.
Like, he did not get tasked.
And no one's accusing Fishback of being the hardest worker at that camp.
Right. Nobody tasked Stephen, hey, go out and look for coconuts. Nobody tasked him, go out and get the firewood. And so I think that for Kelly, she was able to, seems like, and she was doing it on day three, which again, each day longer in the game, there's less and less, ability to monitor exactly what everybody is doing. Seemed like Steven was probably earlier on day two. And I think that Kelly was able to, gather something, come back, look around, come back. And I think that she was a little more inconspicuous with what she was doing.
I think she also has a lot more rope than Steven has. You know, I think socially, I think that she's, it's not just her alliance that she's obviously in good with. I think that people like Vetus, those people, I think that they, Varner came up to her. I think that she's in good with just about everybody on that tribe. So if she walks away, no one's really thinking too much. Everyone's like, oh, well, Kelly gets to go do that. And she also doesn't have a reputation. Like we just said, no one really knows what Kelly Wentworth can do. So, I mean, there should be probably a piece of you that it's like the Russell Hance thing or the Malcolm thing where this person is now on a season who you don't know. It's a total unknown. That person played on a season you haven't seen. Wentworth is kind of the same where, yeah, she played on a season you watched, but you have no idea what she did. So maybe you should be automatically ridiculously suspicious of Kelly Wentworth just as a safety measure. Doesn't seem like anyone's playing that way with her. It seems like she's in well socially enough with these people that they gave her the freedom to walk around without suspicion, and she's able to pull this thing off. I don't think that Steven's got that. I don't think he's got the goodwill of the people in order to do something like that.
Like, I was really surprised that Steven ended up going in the water, because I feel like they're going to say, but why are you all wet? What happened to you? Why did you fall in the water? Why?
Kind of looked like he slipped.
I don't know what was going on there.
It was bad.
Let's talk about sort of the politics besides from Steven. We spent so much time talking about Steven at that Bayon tribe because I think that it's an interesting setup. Probably held, at least from what I had seen in the preseason, according to form, we have Jeremy, who looks like he's sort of the nucleus in Surround and Drown 2.0. Who's in it with Jeremy? We have Tasha? Looks like
Keith. Tasha, him and Keith are patching things over, water under the bridge, sticking to a new plan. Savage is in, so he's got Savage, he's got Keith, he's got Tasha, he's got Joe. So that's a solid five he's got now, and I don't know who a sixth is. That seems to be up for grabs still.
Okay. So for Jeremy, do you like the return to the original plan that he came into San Juan del Sur with? Back to the well.
Well, yeah, I mean, the first thing we see him do when he gets to Hunapu is we see him arming up. We see him staffing up. We see him going to all the ladies on Hunapu, and this time he's going to all the guys. So, you know, he's switching things up. He's trying to surround himself with alpha types. I think he sees himself as an alpha type, or at least he knows that that's how he was viewed the first time out. I think that he doesn't feel like he can change who he is, but he can surround himself with people who are physically like him, who are perceived in a similar way and might be perceived as more dangerous than he is. I think it's a smart strategy for Jeremy. I like this group that he assembled. I think it's shaky that him and Keith are back together, because I know he does not feel fantastic about Keith. I wonder if a true sub-alliance between these two people can really exist. It's a great moment, too, where Keith and Jeremy are strolling along on the path and they're talking to the woods, and Jeremy's like, I thought you and I were fun. Keith's like, yeah, we were. And Keith's not really offering anything substantial, but it seems good enough for Jeremy for now.
One of the things that Jeremy said that I really liked about working with Keith, he's like, you know, I'm just hoping that if he hears anything, he'll let me know. And I wonder if it's like he'll let me know consciously, or maybe Jeremy just feels like Keith's the easiest guy to read.
Yeah, he can read him.
Josh. He's the easiest guy to read. And if somebody's talking about Jeremy, and if Jeremy just goes up and interrogates Keith, I think he might feel like that Keith is very easy to tell if he is telling you the truth or not. And I guess the question is, do you want that guy in your alliance, or do you want that guy out of your alliance?
Right. No, I think that's a great call. I like that a lot. And if that's where Jeremy's head's at, I think that's terrific. I think that's really smart. And I also like that it shows that he's flexible enough that even though pregame he was really worried about Keith, here he is at least making, you know, a conversation, at least coming up with something loose, if not coming up with a fairly firm alliance. To me, it looked like he's telling him, we're good. This is going to be our thing. I like that there's that flexibility to Jeremy, that he's willing to play on his toes a little bit and go away from his original plan of I don't like that Keith is here. This is not great for me. I like that he's able to get over that. I like that he's able to put water under the bridge like that. It shows me, even just outside of the Keith thing, it shows me that Jeremy is willing to swing in a few different directions, that he isn't, you know, so hard and fast on one plan. It shows me that he is willing to shake it up. I think that's going to serve him well.
Somebody else who I thought had a really good night was Joey Amazing, that he comes into this game. I think he ended up in a really soft landing spot where it doesn't seem like there's anybody who is looking to get him out, or at least if they are, they aren't in power.
Savage's daughters love Joey Amazing.
Boy, yes. Who doesn't?
You think he's going to autograph Savage's buff?
Hey, you can get those autographs after the game is over.
Right. That's right.
But I thought that Jeremy was somebody who might have wanted to target Joe, but it seemed like he was pretty high on Joe and looked at him as a good shield to keep around.
Meat shield. Yeah, it's an amazing meat shield. Joey Amazing meat shield. I think that he likes that. I think that he loves Joe.
And he definitely likes that. So it feels like that Joe, who I really thought was going to struggle early on in the game, I thought that people would not want to keep him around. He's really set up well.
I feel like Joe is good on this tribe. If this is like a heroes villains thing where the two tribes just stay exactly where they are, there's no swap, there's no nothing. I highly doubt that that's the case. If this was just ride these two tribes to the merge, I think that Joey Amazing is hitting the merge 1000% of the time. I think that he's good. I think that he's in with really solid people who are solidly with him right now. I think he's in huge trouble whenever a swap comes up, whenever we get closer to the merge. But I think for the early game, I think he really proved it here. He's the guy who's willing to jump off the raft in the marooning, and he catches up to the Takeo raft. And at that point, they throw Wu in the water, and that guy's just going to be able to outswim Joe at that point. As amazing as Joe is, there's nothing he can do there. But Jailbreak, he put that pole together. It was long enough. It was strong enough. Joey Amazing's pole was long and strong, and he got that in one shot. It was, you know, he took a long time building the pole. This is what we saw. He took a very long time. Kelly was up to it first, but Joe put that thing together and just like yanked the key right off and tossed it over the wall, and they were good. It was over really fast once Joey was able to put that thing through the gate. And I think that right away for this drive for Bayonne, I think that this is a group of people. You know, we talked about challenge strength not necessarily being a huge priority. I think it's a different story for these guys at Bayonne. I think they love this. I think that Joey Amazing was the MVP over at Bayonne as far as these people are concerned. I think they love Joe, totally would go to Joga. I don't think that he's in any danger until some sort of swap occurs.
Yes, and the Joga business really got a boon with the competing Vetus Yoga. Vetus Totally Come to Yoga is now not in business anymore.
And maybe Vetus shouldn't have gone to Yoga. At least not this season.
So, Josh, tell me before we start to get into some of the questions from the people that are watching the show, give me one person who you feel like had a better night than you expected them to, and one person who had a worse night than you expected coming into this.
Better night than I expected, I would say, is Chaos Cass. I think that Chaos Cass actually had a really good night. As good of a night as Cass McQuillan can have, I think that she had a really good time. You see her weaving palm fronds with Tasha. She's saying, hey, remember, it's palm fronds 101 all over again. Tasha's like, yeah, that's true. And Tasha, to her credit, didn't just punch Cass in the face immediately. We don't even have any sort of confessional from Tasha saying, oh, I'm stuck on a tribe with Cass. We don't have anybody saying, oh, I'm stuck on a tribe with Cass. Cass and her interpersonal relationships with a lot of these people that we're seeing, she's coming up to Joey Amazing, Savage, and Jeremy and saying, hey, if you use like a thing on my glasses, we can start some fire this way. And yet she's still talking like the same old Chaos Cass in her confessionals. But what she's putting out there, what she said in, you know, those first 8 minutes when she has her first confessional, she's saying, it doesn't matter if I change. I don't need to change. Their perception of me needs to change. I think she was putting that into practice. And so far, we've got no proof that it's not working. I was really impressed with Cass tonight.
Okay. Who is somebody that had a worse night than you anticipated?
Vetus, for sure. I picked him to win.
Besides Vetus, besides something that we haven't talked about yet.
Besides someone we haven't talked about, a worse night than I expected is probably, I don't know. I guess I didn't expect Abby to go this close to the brink this early on. And I know that you're impressed with the fact that Abby held it together, but I just feel like seeing those cracks on Abby this quick, I think is not a great sign. I think it's a sign of things to come.
Okay. Let's just go back to, before we get into those questions, I realize that I don't know if we broke down the vote off Vetus as a move in the game. Who do we give the credit for this move to? Is it Shireen? Is it Spencer? Is it Kelly? Is it PG? Yeah. Who do we give the credit for this?
It looks to me like a three-headed dragon. It looks like it's Shireen. It looks like it's Spencer. It looks like it's Wentworth. It looks like those are the power trio behind this alliance. I think that those are the three. If you want to give credit to one person, maybe you could give, it's hard to give it to one person. I mean, Varner says Shireen wants Vetus gone. And we see it from Shireen first. Vetus is Shamalama Lumalama, monkey thing, whatever. So she's out on Vetus really fast. But we see it from Wentworth, too, independently saying, I just want Vetus effing out of here very quick. And then I think for Spencer, where he is really coming into play is, I think that, and this is a surprise from Spencer, he's getting along really well with just about everybody. We have that great scene with him and Terry, where Terry's like, my kids wrote a dossier. They said that you're the best. I should align with you. And Spencer's like, thank you, family of the Dietzes. I love you people. This is great news for me. I think that he's establishing some really good cover and building some decent bonds with the old schoolers. Even, Kelly Wigglesworth, who's somebody who's not on his squad. He's one of the first people to like give her, a massage at the end of Quest for Fire and tell her it's not your fault. So I feel like Spencer's doing some good work there, too. I feel like it's hard to give credit to one of those people. I feel like that was a three-person effort to get rid of Vetus tonight.
It seemed like, going back to Spencer, he talked about how, I'm going to have more one-on-one conversations in these first 3 days than I did in all of Survivor.
Oh, Kagi-Yan. I'm going to talk to more people in the first 3 days. Yeah, and it looks like he's doing it.
And to me, it really feels like that Spencer came back and is playing by the Team TV rules, because I feel like that's exactly what Tony would be doing. Do you think that Spencer is coming back here trying to run the Team TV playbook?
Yeah, I don't think that that's his intention. I don't think he's interested in that at all. I asked him that question. He says, there's nothing that Tony Vlachos can do that I can do. I can't play the Tony game. But I think that maybe subconsciously some of that is in there. You know, I got to talk to everybody. I got to be working hard. It's the hustle. I think that you could see that, you know, it's you got to hustle to make a dollar. And I think that there's a little bit of that attitude going on with Spencer right now. So he's working it. I don't think that he's taking too much from Team TV. I don't know that there's too much from Tony's game that Spencer could pull off, except for that work ethic, that hustle. You got to always be awake. You got to always be firing on all cylinders. You got to be talking to people. I think that he's doing that in these first 3 days.
Interestingly, Spencer and Wu not on the same side of the vote. Let's just also discuss it from the Shireen angle. Interesting to see Shireen in a somewhat controlling position of how this vote is going to go. We talked about this coming into this game where this is uncharted territory for Shireen. Really, the only vote in Survivor Worlds apart that ends up going her way is that first vote where they end up taking out So Kim. So the first 3 days for Shireen, again, are productive ones. Yeah. So here she is. And she does have the look of somebody who hasn't missed a beat playing from only a couple months ago.
Yeah. You know, and that's what she was saying throughout the pregame. She's talking about how I don't need to lose a vote immediately to like pick up on clues that somebody's about to get blindsided. It's fresh. I see it. I think that that was right. I think that you see it with her conversation with Varner. You know, she's the beachiest of the beach people. She's the one who's yanking people off for walk and talks. So she's putting a lot of effort into this thing as well. A lot of hustle from Shireen. I thought it was a great night for Shireen.
All right, let's get into taking your questions every week. We're going to take your questions. Hashtag RHAP. Also on our YouTube channel at robhasawebsite.com/YouTube. Try to get through a bunch of these questions here with you guys tonight on the first Survivor Know-It-Alls of Survivor Cambodia. And let's start off here with Princess Kendall, who says, who do you think benefited most from keeping Abby over Vidas other than Abby herself?
Yeah, I would say Shireen. I think that Shireen and Abby are, I think that they're really excited to work together. I think that they're happy to work together. I think that Shireen feels like she can make some magic happen with Abby. I think she likes the Brazilian firecracker. I think that this is good for her. I think it's real bad for PG. I don't think it's great for PG. I feel like there's a storm brewing over there. But for Shireen, I think that this is great for Shireen.
Okay, next question. Let's go to Medallion of Power. How many of the 49 laws has Stephen broke already? Look, I'll tell you what. In terms of Stephen Fishback,
is it easier to break the 49 laws of Survivor strategy or that branch? which is easier?
Apparently, the 49 laws of strategy. You know, in terms of Stephen Fishback, I guarantee you that his people blog, which he's still allowed to write this season, which you
that's
can read,
awesome.
If you follow Stephen on Twitter. I'm sure that he will have a different side of events. And I think if I was going to channel him, I think he's probably going to say something along the lines of, look, you only saw a couple of minutes out of a 3 day period. And
doesn't he always famously say exit interviews are not canon? So is the people blog canon?
Yes.
What's the ruling on the field?
Revisionist history. Where he gave himself a preseason fishy. I felt like he sort of rescinded
that.
Yeah,
well, he's got to get one. He's got to give himself one. It's going to be a long season.
But I think that what he would probably say, and again, I have not talked to him since he's been back. I think what he would say is that he had a couple of bad minutes, and he had good talks with lots of people in the camp, and they just didn't show that in this episode.
Well, they're not showing it for a reason. You know, what do you want?
Okay. So Edward Morris says, is Abby going to be good going forward, or was this an anti-Vidas motion? Do you think that the tribe could turn around then and vote Abby out next? Do you think Abby is safe now as part of the six, or do you think that it was just, hey, let's get out Vidas, and then Terry and Kelly and Wu, we need them for the challenges, so now we can go ahead and vote out Abby and keep a 5-3 majority.
Yeah, I don't think that Abby is 100% safe. I don't think that this was Abby Maria is not going anywhere. You know, I don't think that this is Abby is completely protected. I think that she could still be vulnerable, especially if she screws up a challenge or something like that. I think it's possible. I don't think that this is Abby, you know, I don't know that Abby is going to be fantastic coming from this moment. I do think that this was an anti-Vidas vote. I think that more than anything, this was let's get rid of Vidas while we've got the opportunity, more than Abby's going to be great. We got to have Abby. I think that it was really let's get rid of Vidas. This has to be the spot where we get rid of Vidas.
Yeah, I agree. It would not surprise me to see them turn around and vote off Abby next week. And I'm very excited for next week's episode because Josh and I will be live from Caroline's Comedy Club in New York City with a big crowd. About 300 people will be there with us live. We're going to have that episode up for you. It won't be live. I'll probably be able to Periscope it if you can't be there with us live. But then we will have a full video and audio of the podcast posted, hopefully later on Wednesday night. So
that's really exciting. I can't believe 300 people are traveling just to see me. You know, it's very, very humbling. I'm very grateful.
Yeah, believe it. So that's coming up next week. So no live show next Wednesday night here for us on Survivor Know-It-Alls. Austin Rhodes says, does Varner still have the option to flop back to Wu, Terry, and Kelly Wigglesworth if he brings PG? Also, would PG want to make that move? Do you see Varner and PG as a pair, Josh?
It looked like it on the show right now. It looked like those two were a tandem. We've got that great scene with them in the water, and Varner is saying, I think you and I are the same. I think we're in the same spot, PG. So PG and Varner, unlikely pair if that's a pair, but I could see Varner flipping back. You know, we get moments from Varner in this episode. He's like, I don't want to turn on the shelter people. I don't want to do that. He likes those people. He likes Wigglesworth. He went neti potting with Wigglesworth, apparently. You know, that's not something you just do with anybody. So I feel like Varner likes these people. I think he likes Terry. I wouldn't be surprised if Varner is willing to flip back with these people. That's why I think that Abby is not 100% safe. I could see it. And especially if there's frictions that arise between PG and Abby, if it heats up any further, absolutely PG would be down to flip on Abby.
Yeah, I love Jeff Varner as a TV character.
How great is it to have Jeff Varner back, by the way? He's just so good.
He was so good.
He's funny. He's emotional. You know, this whole moment where he's like, I'm turning 50 next year. It's a big year. This is like a real growth narrative aspect of Jeff Varner. Winner's Edit on fire.
Got to be careful with that Winner's Edit and the growth narrative.
Yeah.
Let's go to our next question. This is from AD555. Do you think that hiding clues around the camp instead of idols will continue, maybe leading to an idol hidden at tribal council? No, I think that nobody's getting up during tribal council.
That's the next evolution. That's the next step.
That's the next step. Josh, you want to take this one from Scott Grimes?
Sure. Scott Grimes says, Rob, you've been an actual immunity challenge. Would you ever have the chutzpah to go for that idol like Kelly?
You know what?
I'll answer this for you. The answer is no. No way.
I probably would not. I don't know if I would have been as bold to do what she did there if I didn't think I needed it. If I needed it, sure thing. Absolutely. But I think that I probably would have tried to position myself. And they put it in a tough spot for her because it's like, well, you need where like your strongest guy right there in that spot where it is. Like, it wasn't in the back corner. It was in like the front right corner.
Yeah.
So you were going to have like, I don't know which of the guys that was carrying it there, but you probably wanted to have somebody who was going to be not Kelly Wentworth in that spot.
Yeah.
So that was very good. And I don't think I would have been so brave as Kelly. Jim Rosario says, Varner seems a little frenetic. Is he taking a page from Tony and Mike Holloway?
Ooh. I don't know that Varner's playing a Tony or Mike Holloway game. I kind of think that this is just who Varner has always been. I think that this is very pure Varner when you go back and you look at Australian Outback, that he was a mischief maker, he was a schemer, he was talking to lots of people. I just don't think that the game of Survivor was anywhere close to what it is now. I think that he was a guy in the wrong time. I think that just the natural Jeff Varner is suited for a game like this. I think that, but it's an interesting comparison to Tony and Mike, in terms of these two people who are just like freight trains, you know, with that kind of energy, they just keep barreling forward no matter what they do. And Varner has these lines where he's talking about, you know, this is my second chance. I'm not going to waste it. We have him saying, I'm playing hard. I'm balls to the wall. I think that Varner wants to play that way. I think that there's aspects of Varner that are playing that way immediately. We're getting that that's his intent. But we also hear him saying, like, this game is so much faster than I expected. We know that he's not in the greatest physical condition as well. So can he put that stuff into practice? I'm not sure. But I think that he's got that energy. I think he's got that desire for that energy at least. And, you know, that's kind of been the energy level of the past three winners of Survivor.
Yeah, I definitely understand where we're coming from in terms of Tony and Mike Holloway and, you know, Natalie to a degree. But I'm not sure necessarily I see that necessarily. I don't think that I'm putting Jeff Varner yet in that lineage because
it's episode one.
Yeah.
He's a long way to go.
He's talking with everybody, but in terms of like, you know, really being the person with the incredible motor to be working around the camp nonstop, I'm not sure that Jeff Varner is necessarily that guy.
Yeah, I think the motor is the question. I don't think the motive is the question. I think the motor. Does he have the energy to do it? I think he has the desire, but I don't know if he's got the energy. This is a question from Joe. Do the editors go too far in pushing the misdirection edit, Abby as the target, that the opposite is to be expected?
I don't know. I don't know if necessarily that's the case. I mean, if you went back and compared the Sugar edit for in Survivor Heroes versus Villains, I think that an Abby Maria boot would have been pretty much in line with that. So I don't have any major issues where they telegraphed. If you want to say, oh, it's definitely not going to be Abby. I didn't think that they overdid the Vetus boot edit tonight.
Yeah. What do you think about the fact that, you know, our last full-fledged All-Star season, our last full-fledged returning season, Heroes Villains, season 20, someone like Sugar, someone just very easy to get rid of. In the evolution of strategy, you and I, we talk about how, like, why not go for Ceri there? Why not? Why isn't Tom, you know, assembling the people to do something like that, a bigger move? Maybe Survivor just wasn't ready for that at that point. But here we go. It could have been, you know, a fairly easy vote in terms of keeping the peace with getting rid of Abby. And they go after someone like Vetus. What do you think that says about the progression of the game from, you know, the past 5 years, even where we've gone from Heroes Villains to where we are here in Second Chance?
I think that much more of this game was played before they got to the island than on Survivor Heroes versus Villains. I don't know necessarily if there were conversations between. I really don't feel like there was, again, I wasn't really in the loop at that time. I don't know, but I don't hear a lot of stories about all of these major pre-gaming conversations that were happening with people. I feel like that Survivor, at least the community, was much more disconnected back in 2010. And I think that maybe, okay, this person knows this person, or this person played on a season with that person. But I just don't think it was where everybody's on Twitter with each other. Everybody knows everybody. And there was this big public campaigning that was going on, and you heard people doing interviews, all that stuff. So I just feel like that there's a level of familiarity between these players that I don't think was there with the Heroes versus Villains players.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
And let's take a couple more questions. Michael Norris wants to know, why do people keep blindsiding poor Wu? I feel bad seeing that shocked look again.
Ah, Wu's gonna woo. This is how it's gonna work out for Wu at least a couple times. You gotta imagine Wu's gonna be on the wrong side of the numbers. It wouldn't be Wu on Survivor without a great blindside face. You gotta have at least one. So yeah. I think that's good. I like that.
Did Wu have to go on Ninja Stealth mode or Sonic the Hedgehog to get that rice in the beginning of the season?
I think that was Sonic the Hedgehog. I don't think there's anything stealth about it. You know, he just blitzed towards the boat. He got it. It was good.
You were there. Did you love how that all played out?
Yeah, it was amazing. It was exciting. You know, it was the 15-year anniversary of the series premiere. It was hanging heavy in the air. Probst announced that before the whole thing started filming. So there's just this really awesome energy to that day. And just getting to see everybody row up. It was the first time I was seeing the tribe divisions, just like everybody saw on the show. It was super exciting. It was really, really cool. And it was wild to see that Spencer jumping off the boat shot in person. I'll tell you that, where he's just flying off there. It was cool. It was great. It's awesome.
Okay. This is from Scott Grimes. New know-it-alls. The clue for the hidden immunity idol gave a hint about the challenge. Would it be wise to show that to your tribe to win tribal immunity easier?
Interesting. Maybe not the full tribe, but maybe a better question is, should Wentworth have shown this to people that she's really close with, like a Spencer or a Shireen, so they could screen her or something like that? Does she have enough trust in those people to not make this a total solo job? Because it was a total solo job. Was that risky? What do you think about that?
Well, in terms of preparing for the challenge, what are you going to do? How do you practice that at camp, the quest for fire? So I don't think that there's anything that you could do in terms of getting ready for the competition. But I definitely hear what you're saying in terms of positioning, where it's going to be people. And in fairness, it was probably people from the shelter team that were deciding who was standing where. Like, right. I have a feeling it was probably either some combination of Terry, Vetus, or
Terry had the Joe Torre hat on again.
Right, telling people what was going on. Like, I don't know if Spencer was necessarily telling people who to go in which spot, but I think that would have been good. Okay, if I'm not in that spot, I need one of you guys to grab this thing. But it's that old thing like the Jill and Marty where if Spencer grabs the idol at the challenge, does he say, okay, here you go, Kelly, here's that idol you told me about? Or
wouldn't that be interesting?
Does it come down to, you know, possession is 9/10 of the law or 10/10 of the law, even on Survivor?
Right. And I think it just comes down to how much does Kelly trust these people? Obviously, she trusts them to a point. She feels good about them to a degree. Not good enough to let them in on, you know, an unprecedented way of getting immunity idols at this point. She wanted to try that one on her own speed. So interesting. Interesting that she didn't let them in. I feel like hard to penalize her too much for it. It worked out. It was good.
It was great. Really fun. Yeah. Josh, let's do one last question here tonight. Take it.
Oh, Jacob Buck wants to know who got the Wiggly this week.
Is there a Wiggly?
Is there a Wiggly? I've been getting a lot of questions about this, if I should be doing a Wiggly. I wouldn't be so bold as to give out a fishy. I wouldn't say who's the MVP. Maybe I would say who was the biggest dodo out there? Who needs a hug? Who needs the hug the most?
Okay.
I would give a hug to Steven.
Yeah, he gets the Wiggly.
I think I'd give Steven the Wiggly. I'd give Steven a big hug right now. I feel like he needs it. I hope he's getting a lot of them at his party right now.
If you had to call it, who do you think Steven gives the fishy to tomorrow?
If I had to call it, who is Steven going to give the fishy to? If he's looking at his own tribe, I could see him giving it to Jeremy for assembling a rad squad of people.
I think I got it.
Who do you think it is?
Jeff Varner.
You think Jeff Varner's going to get it?
I think so.
What's the reasoning?
I think that he's going to. I mean, because it'd be tough to where we're talking about, okay, who do we give the credit to? Or Kelly Wentworth. Kelly Wentworth is the other one. Could have been Kelly Wentworth.
Going
for the idol. I think that, I feel like Steven's like thrown shade at Jeff Varner in his pregame on Twitter. So I feel
you think they don't get along?
I don't know. So I'll go Kelly Wentworth 1, Jeff Varner 2.
Okay. You don't think that Shireen or Spencer is in the conversation?
I just don't think there was enough in the edit that really showed that one of them. It could be one of those things where it's a co-fishy between Kelly and Shireen and Spencer. But, you know, when you and I are talking about it, that we can't say this was a Shireen move, this was a Spencer move, this was a Kelly move, this was a PG move. So I think that Jeff had the... seemed like he was the person who was the swing vote in terms of what the episode was showing. But Kelly had that very bold move, and she was also on the right side of the numbers.
Yeah, I mean, I could see him breaking apart the fishy across a few people, but as we saw tonight, he has some difficulty breaking things apart.
So. Yeah, I predict he'll also give a rotten fishy to himself.
Yeah, you think so? Yeah,
I think that's his move.
I hope so.
All right, Josh, this was so fun. Great work out of the gate here tonight. Looking forward to getting together in person to do it next Wednesday night.
Yeah, me too. Total honor. Even a Jervis. It's very exciting to be here. Thanks to everybody who's been really supportive about it. For people who don't know me very well, hope to win you guys over as we talk about this over the weeks ahead. But I'm really amped up on this season. I think it was a fantastic premiere. I'm really jonesing to talk about it more. I'm so happy. I've been waiting for this episode for so long. So now we're all on the same page. We can talk about the same stuff. Let's see where we go from here. I think this is going to be a really exciting season.
Yeah. And just kudos to you because, you knew what was going to happen all summer long. You and I watched all of Survivor Blood versus Water and talked all through it. I had no idea Vitas was going home tonight.
Yeah, well, that was tough. I had
hashtag
to record
blindside.
I had to record that whole chapter without saying that Vitas was going, and I knew that he was. But I think, you know, I gave Vitas a lot of credit in our Blood versus Water chapter on Evolution of Strategy because I think that he's really good. I think that there's a lot of great upside. There's, you know, I got it very, very wrong, but there's a reason why I picked him as a winner, which was obviously an overreach. But I think that he's a good player of Survivor. I think that he got a really bad draw. I think that he overplayed his hand in certain ways. And I think that some of these people, you just look across the aisle and Vitas is the guy you got to get. So I think that he got. I think that Vitas is still a solid player. So everything that I said that was complimentary about him in our Blood versus Water chapter, I hold to. I'm actually interested, Robin, in Evolution of Strategy, for those of you guys who haven't listened to it, he does first boot rankings. He's ranked all of the first boots through 30 seasons of Survivor. Do you have a feeling of where Vitas would land on that in a quick version?
I think that he's clearly a top 10.
He's a top 10. He's probably a top 3, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the people that I have seen a resume of their work, I tend to rate them very highly.
Yeah. So I'm sure that this sucks for Vitas. And we didn't even really touch on this at all. The symmetry between Aris Bushkauskas, winner of Survivor, Vitas Bushkauskas, first boot of Survivor. Turns out you can't be a sibling who wins Survivor and your sibling has to be the first boot. That's how it works with the Andersons.
Yeah, for Natalie and Nadia. That's interesting that they have those other siblings that have the same thing.
I mean, the only other siblings are the Christies and they're just like kind of wherever. But if you win and you have a sibling who's playing Survivor, that person's got to be first one out. That's how it works.
Okay, very good. All right, Josh, what's the hashtag of this episode?
Hashtag. It's got to be something with a fishy branch or something. Like
yeah,
that,
right? Chat room is saying Robga.
Robga, I like that. I would totally go to Robga.
Okay, totally go.
I went to Robga for 14 months. It was great.
Totally go to Robga. All right, so we've got so much coming up. Of course, Josh and I will both be speaking with Vetus separately. I will be doing it on Rob's podcast. Josh will be doing it for Parade.com. And then also I will be speaking with Jenna Lewis as well in our big recap episode
of
the week.
That's great.
Yes.
Can't wait for that.
Also, I'll speak with Haymaker Hattie. Jessica Lease is going to be joining me for voicemails. Get your voicemails in at robhaswebsite.com/voicemail 323-282-RHAP. And then coming up tonight, we're going to do our Big Brother 17 recap coming up here in about 95 minutes. I will be going right from here to watching the Big Brother 17 finale. Looking forward to that.
That's crazy. Get some coffee going, man. You've got a long night ahead of you.
It's going to be a long night. Okay. Follow Josh on Twitter. He's at Round Howard. I am at Rob Sestrino. Anything else, Josh?
No, that's it. Really, really excited. Great first episode. Let's keep it up.
All right. Take care, everybody. Have a great night. Really fun. Can't wait to get into it tomorrow. Take care, everybody. Bye.